Hey, my dear. Ernest Conway, at your service. He gives her a little bow.
Dr. Conway, this is my girlfriend, Alessia DiMarchi.
Maxim looks at her, his shining eyes full of pride. As he turns back to the doctor, his expression hardens.
She's been assaulted and was kicked in the side by someone who is now in police custody. Miss Campbell thought it best that a doctor examine her.
Miss Campbell? Danny, he answers her unspoken question. He gives her hand a quick squeeze.
I'll leave you to it, he adds.
No, please don't go, Alessia blurts out. She does not want to be alone with this strange man.
Maxim nods in understanding.
Of course, if you'd like me to stay.
He sits down in a small blue armchair, stretching out his long legs. Reassured, Alessia turns her attention to the doctor. His expression is serious.
Assaulted?
Alessia nods and feels her face flush with mortification.
Would you like me to take a look? Dr. Conway asks. Okay. Please, sit.
The doctor is kind and patient. He runs through several questions before he asks her to lift her shirt and keeps up a steady stream of chatter while he examines her. His kind manner helps her relax, and she learns that he brought Maxim and his siblings into the world. Alessia glances at Maxim, who gives her a comforting smile. Her heart expands. Mr. Maxim loves her. She smiles back at him, and he grins. The doctor prods Alessia around her stomach and ribs, and the spell between her and Maxim is broken. She winces at Dr. Conway's touch.
There's no permanent damage, and you're lucky not to have any cracked ribs. Just take it easy, and try some ibuprofen if it's painful. Miss Campbell will have some.
Dr. Conway gives her a gentle pat on her arm.
You'll live, he says. Thank you, Alessia says. I should just take a quick photograph of the bruise. The police might need it for their records. What?
Alessia's eyes widen.
Good idea, says Maxim. Lord Trevethick, would you mind?
He hands Maxim his phone.
Just the bruise.
Darling, I'll only photograph the bruise, nothing else. She nods and lifts her shirt once more, and Maxim takes a few quick snaps.
Done.
He hands the phone back to the old man.
Thank you, Dr. Conway replies.
With a look of relief, Maxim says,
I'll show you out, doctor.
Alessia quickly rises to her feet and takes Maxim's hand. He smiles down at her and laces his fingers through hers.
We'll both see you out.
Maxim gestures to the door, and they follow Dr. Conway into the corridor. They watch as the doctor drives off in his old car. Maxim has his arm around Alessia's shoulders, and she's nestled into his side. It feels natural.
They are standing in the wide hallway at the front of the house.
You know, you can hold me too, Maxim says, his tone warm and encouraging. Shyly, she snakes an arm around his waist. He grins. See how well we fit together. And he kisses the top of her head.
I'll give you the tour later. Right now I want to show you something.
They turn around, but Alessia stops when she notices the large sculpture above the stone fireplace that dominates the hall. It's the shield that Maxim has tattooed on his biceps, but it's more decorative. There are two stags on each side, a knight's helmet above it, and above that, in a swirl of yellow and black, a small coronet bearing a lion. Beneath the shield, there's a scrolled caption, Fides Vigilantia.
My family's coat of arms, Maxim explains.
And on your arm, she asks, what do the words mean?
It's Latin, loyalty in vigilance.
She looks puzzled, and Maxim shrugs.
Something to do with the first Earl and King Charles II. Come.
It seems he doesn't wish to say any more. He's buoyant, eager to show her something, and his excitement is infectious. From somewhere deep in the house, the clock that Alessia heard earlier announces the hour, one chime echoing through the hall. He grins, looking boyish and adorable. She can't quite believe he's fallen for her. He's talented, handsome, kind, wealthy, and he's saved her from Dante and Illy once more. Hand in hand, they walk through a lengthy hallway that's lined with paintings and the occasional ornate console table laden with statues, busts, and ceramics. They ascend the great staircase where they had their conversation earlier and cross to the other side of the landing from the double doors.
I think you might like this, Maxim says, and he opens the door with a flourish. Alessia walks into a large chamber with wood-paneled walls and an elaborate plaster ceiling. At one end is a bookcase that covers the entire wall, but at the other, bathed in light from a huge mullioned window, is a full-size grand piano, the most ornate piano Alessia has ever seen. She gasps and whips her head around to Maxim. Please, play, he says. Alessia claps her hands and bolts across the wooden floor, the sound of her quick footsteps echoing off the walls. She stops a pace away from the piano to take in its majesty. It's made of a highly polished wood with a rich grain that gleams in the light. The legs are solid and intricately carved with leaves and grapes, the sides inlaid with a complex marquetry of golden ivy leaves. She runs her finger along the cartouche. It's splendid.
She's old, Maxim says over Alessia's shoulder.
Lost in wonder, she hadn't heard him approach. She doesn't understand why he sounds apologetic.
It's magnificent. I have never seen a piano like this, she whispers in admiration.
It's American, from the 1870s. My great-great-grandfather married a railroad heiress from New York. This came here with her.
It's beautiful. How does it sound?
Let's find out. Here.
Maxim makes quick work of lifting the top board and using the longer prop to hold it open.
I don't think you'll need this, but I thought you might like to see it.
Raising the music rack, he sets it in place.
It's etched in a fine filigree. Cool, huh?
Alessia nods in awe.
Sit, play.
Alessia flashes him a delighted grin and pulls the carved piano stool forward. Maxim steps out of her sightline, and she closes her eyes to collect herself. She places her hands on the keys, relishing the feel of the cool ivory beneath her fingertips. She presses down, and the D-flat major chord sings into the room, resonating off the wooden paneling. The tone is rich, like the dark green of a forest fir, but the action is light, surprisingly light for such an old piano. Opening her eyes, she stares down at the keys, wondering how this instrument could have survived for so long and made it through such an epic journey from America. Maxim and his family must cherish their possessions. Shaking her head with incredulity, she places her hands on the keys once more and, not bothering with her warm-up piece, begins to play her favorite Chopin prelude. The notes of the first four bars dance across the room in a verdant spring green, the color of Maxim's eyes. But as she plays, the colors become darker and more ominous, filling the room with portent and mystery. Consumed by the music, she surrenders herself to each precious note. It drives away her anxiety and her fear. All the horror of the morning fades and then disappears in the dark and emerald greens of Chopin's remarkable, stirring masterpiece.
I watch, enthralled, as Alessia plays the Raindrop Prelude. With her eyes closed, she's lost in the music, her face expressing every thought and feeling that Chopin evokes in the piece. Her hair flows down her back, glinting like a raven's wing in the light of the winter sun that streams through the window. She's captivating, even in that football shirt. The notes swell and fill the room, and my heart. She loves me. She said so. I'll have to get to the bottom of why she thought she'd be better off leaving. But for the moment, I'll listen and watch her play. Hearing a muffled cough from outside the room, I look up. Danny and Jesse are poised on the threshold, listening. I wave them in. I want to show Alessia off. This is what my girl can do. They tiptoe into the room and stand watching Alessia with the same look of amazement that I'm sure I had when I first heard her play. And they can see she doesn't have the sheet music. She's performing this from memory. Yeah, this is what she does best. Alessia plays the final two bars, and the notes fade into the air, leaving us entranced. As she opens her eyes, Danny and Jesse burst into applause, as do I. She smiles shyly at them. "Brava, Mr. Marchi! That was exceptional," I exclaim as I walk over and bend to kiss her, my lips grazing hers. When I look up, Danny and Jesse have gone, as discreetly as they appeared.
"Thank you," Alessia whispers.
"What for?"
"Saving me. Again?"
"It is you who has saved me." She frowns as if she doesn't believe me, and I sit down beside her on the piano stool. "Trust me, Alessia. You've saved me in ways I can't even begin to fathom. And I don't know what I would have done if they'd taken you." I kiss her once more.
"But I've brought such trouble into your life."
"You have done nothing of the kind. This is not your fault, for God's sake. Never think that." Her lips thin for a moment, and I know she doesn't share my point of view. But she reaches up and strokes my chin.
"And for this," she whispers and glances at the piano. "Thank you."
She leans up and kisses me.
"Can I play some more?"
"All you want. Always. I'm going to make some calls. My flat was burgled over the weekend."
"No!"
I suspect it was the same two bastards who are now in the custody of the Devon and Cornwall police. I think that's how they found us. I need to talk to Oliver.
"The man I spoke to on the phone?"
"Yes, he works for me."
"I hope they did not take much."
I caress her face with one hand. "Nothing that can't be replaced. Unlike you." Dark eyes shine at me, and she leans her face into my hand. I brush my thumb over her bottom lip and ignore the fire that lights low in my belly. Time for that later. I won't be long. I give her a swift kiss and head toward the door. Alessia launches into Louis-Claude Dacan's piece, Le Cuckoo, which I learned when doing my grade 6, and the bright and breezy notes follow me out of the room. From my study, not Kit's, I call Oliver. Our conversation is all business. He's handling the fallout from the burglary. Mrs. Blake and one of her assistants are at the flat clearing up. Two members of the construction crew in Mayfair have been dispatched to repair the front door, and a locksmith will change the locks on the entry to the street. The alarm is untouched and working fine, but we decide to change the code. I choose Kit's birth year as the new number. Oliver is keen for me to return to London. He has documents that I need to sign for the Crown Office to register my succession to the earldom and entry onto the roll of the peerage. With Alessia's assailants under arrest and in custody, there's no reason for us to stay in Cornwall. When I finish with Oliver, I call Tom to see how Magda and her son are faring. I tell him about the attempted kidnapping.
"Well, that's fucking audacious," Tom splutters. "How's your young lady? Is she okay?"
"She's tougher than all of us."
"Good to hear. I think I should keep an eye on Mrs. Janacek and her son for a couple of days, until we find out what the police are going to do with those scumbags."
"Agreed.
I'll report anything suspicious."
"Thanks."
"You okay?"
"Peachy." Tom laughs.
"Good to hear. Over and out."
Moments after I hang up on Tom, my phone buzzes. It's Caroline.
"Damn.
I told her I'd call next week."
"Shit. It is next week."
I've lost track of time. Sighing, I answer the phone with a terse, "Hey."
"There you are,"
she snaps.
"What the hell are you playing at?"
"Hello, Caroline.
It's nice to talk to you too. Yes, thanks, I've had a great weekend.
And don't start with your bullshit, Maxim. Why haven't you called me?
Her voice cracks, and I know she's hurt. I'm sorry. Events have been a little beyond my control down here. Please, let me explain when I see you. I'll be back in London tomorrow or the day after.
What events? The burglary?
Yes and no.
Why all this subterfuge, Maxim?
She whispers.
What's going on?
Her voice drops lower.
I've missed you.
Her grief echoes through each syllable of her response, and I feel like shit. I'll tell you when I see you. Please. She sniffs, and I know she's crying. Fuck. Caro, please.
You promise?
I promise. As soon as I'm back, I'll come see you.
Okay.
Bye for now. I hang up and ignore the sinking feeling in my stomach. I have no idea how she'll react to what's been happening here. Yes, I do. It's going to get ugly. I sigh once more. My life has been complicated beyond recognition by Alessia De Marchi. But even as the thought pops into my head, I smile. My love. We could head back to London tomorrow. I can see for myself the damage done to my flat. There's a knock on the door.
Come in.
Danny enters.
Sir, Jessie's prepared some lunch for you and Alessia. Where would you like us to serve it?
In the library. Thank you, Danny. I think the formal dining room might be a little overwhelming just for the two of us, and the breakfast room is a little dull. She likes books, so...
If it suits your lordship, we'll be set up in 5 minutes.
Great. I realize how hungry I am. A quick glance at the Georgian wall clock above the door tells me it's 2:15. Its steady tick reminds me of the times I waited in this office for the bollocking my father administered whenever I'd transgressed, which was often. Right now, the clock says way past lunchtime.
Oh, Danny!
I call her back.
My lord?
After lunch, can you go to the hideout and retrieve all our belongings and bring them here? Put everything in my room, including the dragon nightlight that's beside the bed.
Will do, sir.
With a nod, she departs. As I approach the bottom of the staircase, I hear the music. Alessia is deep into another complex piece, one I don't know. Even down here, it sounds amazing. I quickly head up the stairs and stand just inside the room, watching her from afar. I think this composition is by Beethoven. I haven't heard her play any of his work before. A sonata, maybe. The music is rousing and passionate one moment, and then quieter and softer the next. Such a lyrical piece. And she plays it exquisitely. She should be filling concert halls. The music spirals down to its close, and Alessia sits for a second, her head lowered, eyes closed. When she looks up, she's surprised to see me.
Another great performance.
What was it? I ask as I stroll across the floor toward her.
It is Beethoven, Tempest, she says.
I could watch and listen to you play all day. But lunch is served, rather late. You must be hungry.
Yes, I am.
She jumps up off the stool and accepts my outstretched hand.
I love this piano. It has a rich, tone.
Tone? That's the correct word.
You have so many instruments here. I only had the eyes for the piano at first.
I grin. Only had eyes for. No, the.
You really don't mind me correcting you? No, I like to learn.
Cello is my sister Marianne's instrument. My father played the double bass. The guitars are mine. The drums over there were Kit's.
Your brothers?
She asks. Yes.
It is an unusual name.
Kit is short for Christopher. He was a demon on drums. I stop by the crash cymbal and run my fingers over the polished bronze. Kit. Drum Kit. Get it? I flash her a smile. Alessia gives me a puzzled look. We used to joke about it. I shake my head, remembering Kit's shenanigans on the drums. Come on, I'm hungry.
Maxim's eyes gleam a brilliant green as he looks at her, but she can see from the tension across his forehead that his grief is still raw and he misses his brother.
"So that's the music room," he says as they leave and head back down the great staircase, stopping at the bottom. "The main drawing room is through those double doors, but today we're having lunch in the library."
"You have a library?"
Alessia asks, excited. He smiles.
"Yes, we have a few books. Some of them are quite old."
They head back toward the kitchen, but Maxim stops outside one of the doors in the corridor.
"I should warn you, my grandfather was keen on all things Egyptian."
He opens the door, standing aside for Alessia to enter. She pauses a few steps into the room. It's like she's entered another world, a treasure trove of literature and antiquities. On every available wall, there are floor-to-ceiling bookshelves stuffed with books. At each corner is either a plinth or a cabinet holding treasures from Egypt. Canopic jars, statues of pharaohs, sphinxes, a full-size sarcophagus. A fire rages in the grate beneath an ornate marble fireplace that's set between two tall but narrow windows overlooking a courtyard. Hanging above the mantelpiece is an old painting of the pyramids.
"Oh boy, the staff have gone all out," Maxim says, as if to himself.
Alessia follows his gaze. Before the fire, a small table covered in a fine linen cloth is elaborately set for two. Silver cutlery, cut glasses, and delicate china plates decorated with small thistles. He holds out a chair for her.
"Sit."
He nods at her seat. Alessia feels like the noblewoman Donica Castrioti, the wife of Skanderbeut, Albania's 15th century hero. She gives him a gracious smile and sits down at the table facing the fire. Maxim sits at the head.
"As a young man in the early 1920s, my grandfather worked with Lord Carnarvon and Howard Carter, excavating various sites in Egypt and stealing all these antiquities. Maybe I should send them back."
He pauses.
"Until very recently, that was Kit's dilemma."
"You have so much history here."
"Yes, we do. Rather too much of it, perhaps. It's my family's legacy."
Alessia cannot imagine the responsibility of dealing with such a heritage. There's a knock at the door, and without waiting for an answer, Danny enters, followed by a young woman carrying a tray. Maxim reaches for his linen napkin and drapes it on his lap. Watching him, Alessia follows suit. Danny takes two plates from the tray and serves each of them what looks like a salad with meat and avocado and pomegranate seeds.
"Pulled pork from one of the local farms, with a salad of fresh leaves, finished with a pomegranate jus," Danny says.
"Thanks," Maxim responds, and gives Danny a quizzical look. "Would you like me to pour the wine, my lord?"
"I've got this, thanks, Danny."
She gives him a little nod and discreetly ushers the young woman out the door. "A glass of wine?" Maxim picks up the bottle and studies the label. "It's a good Chablis."
"Yes, please."
She watches as he half fills her glass.
"I have never been waited on, except when I'm with you."
"Waited on," he says.
"While we're here, you might as well get used to it."
He winks at her.
"You do not have staff in London."
"No, though that may have to change."
His brow furrows for a moment, and then he raises his glass.
"Two narrow escapes."
She raises hers.
"Gezuar, Maxim, my lord."
He laughs.
"I'm still not used to the title."
"Eat up. You've had a horrible morning."
"I think the afternoon will be much better."
Maxim's look is heated, and Alessia smiles and takes a cautious sip of her wine.
It is so much better than the wine she tasted with her grandmother.
"You like?" Maxim asks.
She nods and studies her cutlery. She has an array of knives and forks to choose from. Glancing at Maxim, she sees him smile and pick up the outermost knife and fork. Always start from the outside and work inward with each course.
Chapter 24. After lunch, we head outside. Alessia's hand is warm in mine. The day is crisp and cold, and the sun is low in the sky as we walk together down the beach-lined avenue that leads to the front gates. Jensen and Healy scamper along behind, beside, and in front of us, grateful to be outdoors. After the trauma of this morning, I think we're both enjoying this quiet and peaceful walk in the late afternoon sunshine.
Look!
Alessia exclaims as she points to the herd of fallow deer grazing on the horizon of the north pasture. We've had deer here for centuries.
The one we saw yesterday? It was from here?
No, I think it was wild.
The dogs do not bother them?
No, but we keep the dogs out of the south pasture near lambing time. We don't want them worrying the sheep.
There are no goats here?
No, we're more sheep and cattle people.
We are goat people.
She grins at me. Her nose is pink from the cold, but she's bundled up in her coat, hat, and scarf. She looks adorable. And I find it hard to believe that she was the victim of an attempted kidnapping this morning. My girl is stoic. But there's one thing that's been bugging me. I have to know. Why did you want to leave? Why didn't you want to stay and have it out with me? I hope she doesn't hear the apprehension in my voice. Have it out with you? Talk to me. Argue with me. I explain. She stops beneath one of the beech trees and looks down at her boots, and I don't know if she's going to answer me.
I was hurt, she says after an age.
I know. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt you. I never want to hurt you. But where would you have gone?
I don't know.
She turns to face me.
I think it was, how do you say, instinct. You know, Yili and Dante, I've been running for so long. I was a little crazy.
I can't imagine how terrifying that was for you. I cringe and close my eyes, thanking all the gods that I got to her in time. But you can't run every time we have a problem. Talk to me. Ask me questions about anything. I'm here. I'll listen. Argue with me. Shout at me. I'll argue with you. I'll shout at you. I'll get it wrong. You'll get it wrong. That's all okay. But to resolve our differences, we have to communicate. A fleeting look of anxiety crosses her face. Hey. I tilt her chin up and draw her closer to me. Don't look worried. If you're going to live with me, you know, you need to tell me how you feel.
Live with you? She whispers.
Yeah.
Here?
Here and in London? Yes. I want you to live with me.
As you're a cleaner?
I laugh and shake my head. No. As my girlfriend. I meant what I said on the landing. Let's do this. I hold my breath. My heart is racing. And deep down, I don't know what choice she has. But I love her. I want her with me. Marriage seems too big a step to throw at her right now. I don't want her to run again. Bro, it's also a big step for you.
Yes, she whispers.
Yes.
Yes!
With a shout of joy, I scoop her up and swing her around. The dogs start barking and jump up at us with tails wagging, eager to join in the fun. She's giggling, but suddenly she winces.
Shit.
I set her down immediately. Did I hurt you?
No,
she says. And I take her face between my palms and she sobers, her eyes shining with love and maybe desire.
Alessia.
Leaning down, I kiss her. And what's meant to be a gentle, I love you kiss becomes something other. She opens up like an exotic flower, kissing me back with a passion that's staggering, and I revel in all she has to give. her tongue in my mouth, her hands moving over my back and clutching at the material of my coat. All the stress of this morning, the sight of her with those lowlifes, the fact that I might never have seen her again, all of that vanishes, and I pour my fears and my gratitude that she's still with me into our kiss. When we come up for air, our breath mingles in a steamy fog in the cold around us, and her fingers are wrapped around the lapels of my coat. Jensen sticks his muzzle into my thigh. Ignoring him, I lean back to look at Alessia's dazed expression. I think Jensen wants to join in. Her giggle is breathy, and it speaks directly to my groin. I also think we're wearing too many clothes. I rest my forehead on hers. Do you want to take them off? She chews on her lip. Always. I am warm. Too warm, she whispers. What? I look down at her once more. My remark was flippant and meant to be amusing, not a come-on. What is she saying? Oh, sweetheart, you've just been through a terrible ordeal. She lifts one shoulder in a so-what manner and averts her eyes. What are you telling me? I ask. I think you know. You want to go to bed. Her broad grin is all the encouragement I need. And against my better judgment, I grab her hand. Beaming and giddy, we trot back to the house with the dogs in hot pursuit.
This is my room. Maxim stands aside for Alessia to enter. It's a few doors down from the blue room where Danny had brought her earlier. A magnificent four-poster dominates the dark green room. Made of the same highly polished wood as the piano, the bed is just as intricately carved. The flames in the fireplace cast flickering shadows over the carvings. Above the mantelpiece, there's a painting of the house and the surrounding countryside, and at the far end of the room stands an immense wardrobe in the same wood as the bed. On every wall are shelves covered in books and curios, but Alessia's gaze is drawn to the nightstand, where the little dragon nightlight sits. Maxim throws several more logs on the fire until it blazes. Good, I'm glad someone had the foresight to light the fire. Returning to stand in front of her, he points to a wicker basket perched on the ottoman at the end of the bed. I've had your stuff brought here from the hideout. I hope that's okay. His voice is low and soft, and his eyes glow, intense, growing larger and darker, full of his desire. A tingle runs down Alessia's spine. It's okay, she whispers. You've had a rough day. I want to go to bed. She remembers their kiss on the stairs. She would have taken his clothes off then and there if she'd had the nerve. He strokes her face. Maybe you're still in shock. I am, she whispers. I am shocked that you love me. With all my heart, Maxim says with real sincerity. But then he smiles and puts his arm around her. And with this, he tilts his pelvis forward so she can feel his erection against her hip. His eyes alive with carnal humor, she returns his smile as the fire in her belly ignites. She's been longing to touch him. After all, he's touched her everywhere, with his hands, with his lips, with his tongue, just as he promised. Her gaze moves to his mouth, his skilled and sensual mouth, and the flames in her belly lick higher. What do you want, beautiful? The backs of his fingers stroke her face, and his eyes sear her soul. She's wanted him since he said he loved her. I want you. The words are barely audible. He groans. You never cease to surprise me. Do you like surprises? From you, very much. Alessia tugs at his white shirt until it slips out of the waistband of his jeans. Are you going to undress me? Maxim's voice is hoarse, like he stopped breathing. She eyes him from beneath her lashes. Yes. She can do this. And with brave but trembling fingers, she undoes the lowest of his shirt buttons. She glances up at him. Go on, he coaxes, his tone soft and seductive. Alessia hears the burgeoning excitement in his voice. It feeds her desire. She undoes the next one up, revealing the top button of his jeans and the line of hair that points to his lean abs. The next button reveals his navel and his honed stomach muscles. Maxim's breathing alters, rising, more rapid. The sound excites her, and her fingers fly up his shirt, unfastening it until it's hanging loose and open, revealing his sun-kissed chest. She longs to lean forward and place her lips against his flesh. What now, Alessia? He's waiting. Whatever you want, he says, arousing her. She leans forward and presses her lips against the warmth of his chest, where his heart thunders beneath his skin.
I am itching to touch her, but I can't. This is the most audacious she's been with me since we first made love. My body is straining. How can her innocent touch be so erotic? She's driving me wild. She eases my shirt over my shoulders and tugs it down to my elbows. I present her with my wrists. Cuffs. She flashes me a grin and undoes each one in turn, then drags my shirt off and drapes it over the armchair in front of the fire.
Now what are you going to do? He says. Alessia steps back to admire his fine-toned physique in the dancing light of the fire. The gold in his hair glints and his eyes are a luminous green. They watch her, full of promise, as he stares. Emboldened by his gaze, she reaches down and peels off her sweater, then tugs her football shirt over her head and shakes her hair loose. But her courage fails at the last minute, and she hesitates, holding the top to her breasts. Maxim steps forward and gently takes it from her. You're lovely. I like looking at you. You won't be needing this. He tosses it on top of his shirt, then takes a strand of her hair and winds it around his finger. Bringing it to his lips, he kisses it. You are so brave, in so many ways, and I've fallen for you, all of you, madly, passionately. His words heat her blood, and he tugs the lock, drawing her into his arms. He angles her head and kisses her like his life depends on it. I could have lost you, he whispers. His skin is warm against hers, and the desire within her burns brighter. She wants him, all of him. Greedily she kisses him, her tongue twisting with his. Her hands rest on the back of his head, drawing him closer. His lips move to her jaw, her throat, and her hands travel down his body to the waistband of his jeans. She wants to touch him, every inch of him, but she stops. She doesn't know what to do. Maxim holds her chin tenderly between his fingers. Alessia, he growls against her ear. I want you to touch me. The need in his voice is arousing. I want to. He grazes her earlobe with his teeth. Ah, she groans as the muscles tighten deep in her belly. Undo my jeans. He kisses a trail of butterfly kisses down her neck. Hastily, her fingers scramble to his waistband, brushing against his hardened penis. She stops, fascinated by his body, and in a really bold move, places her hand over his erection. Oh, God, he whispers. Tentatively, her fingers trace around him. He gasps, and she stops. I am hurting you. No, no, no. This is good. Yeah, he's breathless. Really good. Don't stop. She grins, feeling more confident. With deft fingers, she undoes his top button. He stands stock still as she moves to the zipper.
I take a deep breath. She is going to unman me. Her delight is contagious, and I love that she's finally plucking up the courage to undress me. In the firelight, her skin is radiant, and the deep red and blue highlights glimmer in her hair. I want to throw her onto the bed and make easy, sweet love to her. But I need to slow down, let her discover things at her own pace. While she undoes my fly, she seems less self-conscious. She's even forgotten she's not wearing her bra. She has beautiful, full breasts. I want to worship each one until her nipples are rock hard and she's squirming beneath me. But I restrain myself and muffle my groan. She tugs my jeans down my legs and I step out of them, so I'm standing before her in just my underwear. Your turn, I whisper, and make quick work of her fly and peel off her jeans. She steps out of them, and I cup her face gently and kiss her. It's cold. Let's get into bed. Okay. She slides under the covers, her eyes on me.
Oh, the bed is cold, she squeaks.
We'll warm it up.
Alessia's eyes flit to his straining shorts. He grins. What? He asks. She flushes. What? Maxim insists. Take them off. My underwear. Maxim's smile is lopsided. Yes. He smirks and removes one sock, then the other. There. That is not what I was talking about. She giggles, marveling at how boyish he can be. He laughs, and with one swift move slides off his shorts, freeing his erection, then tosses the underpants at her. Hey, she cries out, playfully. She deflects them, but he leaps onto the bed, landing beside her. Ugh, move over. Maxim snuggles in beside her under the sheets, putting his arm around her and pulling her close. I want to hold you for a moment. I can't believe I almost lost you today. He plants a soft kiss in her hair and squeezes her tight. She sees he's closed his eyes, as if he's in pain. You didn't. I am here. I would have fought them to stay with you, she whispers. They would have hurt you. Sitting up suddenly, he lifts her hand to inspect the bruise on her side. His demeanor hardens. Look at what they did to you. He hesitates, concerned. It's okay. She's suffered worse. Maybe we should just nap. Maxim looks doubtful. What? No. I don't think. Maxim, don't think. Alessia. She reaches up and places a finger on his lips. Please, she says. Oh, baby. Taking her hand, he kisses each knuckle. Then he bends down and wrings her bruise with tender kisses. Her fingers find his hair, and she tugs hard so that he has to look up at her. Does it hurt? No, she says hurriedly. I want this. I want you. He sighs, and his mouth travels up to her breast and its nipple, teasing and sucking as he goes. She groans and writhes beneath him, closing her eyes and surrendering to the pleasure of his touch and his lips. Her fingers dig into his back, and she feels his erection against her hip. She's yearning to explore his body, all of his body. He looks up at her. What is it? I, she blushes. Tell me. She laughs, embarrassed, and shuts her eyes. Tell me. She opens one eye and squints at him. You're driving me crazy. What is it? I want to touch you, she says, and hides her face with her hands. Peeking through her fingers, she watches Maxim's eyes soften. Amused, she thinks. He lies down beside her. I'm all yours, he says. She leans up on one elbow, and they gaze at each other. You're so lovely, he whispers. She strokes his cheek, enjoying the feel of his rough stubble. Here, let me help you, Taking hold of her hand, he plants a kiss in her palm. He moves it to his chest, and she splays it out against his skin, feeling his warmth. His lips part as he takes a sharp breath. I like you touching me. Encouraged, she moves her hand down, her fingers tickling the fine hair that's sprinkled across his chest. She skims over one of his nipples, and it puckers under her touch. Oh, she breathes in delight. Oh, he responds, his voice hoarse, his eyes hooded, and a dark, mossy green. He's watching her like a hawk. She bites her upper lip, and he groans. Don't stop, he whispers. Feeling more wanton and enjoying the fact that she's turning him on, she moves her hand south over his smooth skin, over the bluffs and dips of his abdominal muscles. He tenses beneath her touch, and his breathing accelerates. She reaches the line of hair that leads down to her destination, and her courage falters. Here, he says, and taking her hand, wraps it around his erection. She gasps, both shocked and thrilled in equal measure. It's big and hard and velvet smooth at once. Her thumb brushes the tip, and he closes his eyes, inhaling sharply. She tightens her hold, enjoying the feel of him beneath her fingers, feeling the pulse within him. He turns blazing eyes to her. Like this, he whispers, and guiding her hand, moves it slowly, a fraction down and then up.
I've never had to show a woman what to do. It's possibly the most erotic thing I've ever done. Alessia's brow is furrowed as she concentrates, but her eyes are alive with wonder and desire, her mouth a little slack as she moves her hand, finally finding her rhythm and driving me wild. When she licks her lips, I want to come in her hand. Alessia, enough. I'm going to come. She immediately removes her hand as if she'd been burned, and I regret saying anything. I want to swoop over and into her, but she's got that damned bruise and I can't. I don't want to hurt her. She takes matters into her own hands, climbing onto me, her lips finding mine as she kisses me, pushing her tongue into my mouth, tasting me. Her hair forms a lush curtain around us, and for a split second we stare at each other in the firelight. Rich brown eyes to green. She's so bewitching, and giving, and sensual, and she's here with me. She leans down and kisses me once more, and I reach over to the bedside table to grab a condom. Here, I show her the packet, and for a moment I wonder if she's going to take it and put it on me, but she blinks, uncertain. Move down. I'll show you what to do. I rip open the packet. Take out the rubber, and pinching the end, quickly roll it over my eager dick. There. All done. We just have to get your knickers off. She laughs as I roll her onto the mattress and hook my thumbs into her pink panties. The pink panties. I sweep them down her long legs and pitch them onto the floor. I'm kneeling between her thighs, but I sit back on my heels and pull her onto my lap with my arm around her waist, careful to avoid that bruise. Is this okay? She has her hands on my shoulders, and I lift her and position her over my straining cock. I'm waiting for her answer. She leans forward, her lips eager on mine, and I take that as my cue. And slowly, oh so fucking slowly, I lower her onto me. Her teeth close around my bottom lip, and for a moment I think she's going to bite me. When I'm fully inside her, she gasps and releases my lip. Okay, I breathe. Yes, she nods enthusiastically. Her fingers are once more knotted in my hair and she yanks hard, bringing my lips to hers. She's ravenous, devouring me, needy, kissing me with the same intensity that she showed on the stairs. And I don't know if it's because of what happened to her earlier or if it's because I've told her that I love her. But she's on fire. She moves up and down again and again, taking me, taking me. It's heady, it's hot, but it's frantic. This is going to end too soon. Hey. I tighten my hold around her, stilling her, and I smooth her hair from her face. Easy, baby, easy. We have the rest of the evening, and all night, and tomorrow, and the day after that. Dark, dazed eyes blink at me, and my heart swells with a new and intoxicating feeling that consumes me. I've got you, I whisper. I love you.
Maxim,
she breathes, leaning forward and kissing me once more, her arms clasped around my neck. She starts to move again, more slowly, letting me savor her, inch by inch, steadier, easier. It's heaven. Fuck. And she rises and falls, rises and falls, taking me with her, climbing and climbing, until she stalls and cries out her orgasm, her mouth raised to the heavens and triggering my own shattering release. Oh, Alessia! We lie still and quiet, facing each other, not speaking, just looking. Eyes, noses, cheeks, lips, faces. We gaze at each other, absorbing each other. The only light is from the flickering flames of the fire, and all I hear is the spit and crackle of the burning logs and the thud of my heartbeat as it slows. Alessia raises her hand and traces my lips with her fingers.
I love you, Maxim,
she whispers. And I lean forward and kiss her once more. Her body rises to meet mine, and we make sweet, sweet love again. We are cocooned beneath the sheets in our own makeshift camp in my bedroom. Both of us are sitting cross-legged, knees touching, eyes intent on each other, and lit by the light of the little dragon that joins us in our secret tented hideout. She's talking and talking, and I'm listening. She's naked. Her hair is loose and flowing down to her waist, preserving her modesty, and she's explaining how she learns a new piece for the piano.
I will read the music for the first time, and I will see the colors. They, how do you say, match a key?
A color for each key?
Yes. D-flat major is a green, like a fir tree from Cuckoo's. The raindrop prelude, all greens, but some darker greens as the piece changes. Other keys are different colors, and sometimes a piece may have many colors, like the Rachmaninoff, and they, print in my head, and I remember the piece.
She shrugs and gives me an impish smile.
For a long time, I thought everyone sees all the colors in music.
If only we were so lucky. I run a finger down her soft cheek. You're special. Very special to me. She blushes her lovely shade of pink. And who's your favorite composer? Bach, I ask.
Bach.
She breathes his name with such veneration.
His music is...
She gestures and waves with her hands, seeking inspiration, trying to capture the magnitude of what she wants to say. And she closes her eyes as if she's experiencing an ecstatic, religious moment. Awe-inspiring, I offer. She laughs.
Yes.
She sobers and lowers her lashes, then peeks up at me through them.
But my favorite composer is you.
I inhale sharply. I'm not used to her compliments. My composition? Wow. You flatter me. What colors do you see with that?
That was sad and solemn. Blues and greys.
Fitting, I murmur, and my thoughts turn to Kit. She reaches up and caresses my cheek, bringing me back to her.
I watched you play it at your apartment. I was supposed to be cleaning, but I had to watch you and listen. It's beautiful music.
Her voice softens to a barely audible whisper.
I fell more in love with you then.
You did? She nods, and my heart swells at her words. I wish I'd known you were listening. I'm glad you liked it. You played it so well at the hideout.
I loved it. You are a talented composer. I take her hand and trace a pattern on her palm. You're a very accomplished pianist. She grins and flushes once more. Surely she should be used to compliments. You're so talented. And beautiful. And brave. My fingers stroke her face, and I draw her lips to mine. And beneath the sheet, we lose ourselves in a kiss. When Alessia pulls away to catch her breath, she gazes at me with longing once more.
Shall we make love again?
She leans forward and places her lips on my chest above my heart. Oh, boy. Alessia is lying across me, head on my chest, her fingers tapping out a melody over my stomach. I don't know what it is, but I'm enjoying it. I call the kitchen via the internal phone system. Danny, I'd like some supper in my room. Can we have some sandwiches and a bottle of wine?
Very good, my lord. Beef?
Great. And a bottle of the Chateau Aubryon.
I'll leave a tray outside the door, sir.
Thank you. I smile at the blatant glee in her voice and hang up the phone. I don't know why, but Danny knows that Alessia is different. I've brought women here before, but Danny's never been as solicitous as she's been today. She must know that I'm in love. Head over heels, completely, utterly, wholly in love.
You have a phone for inside the house?
Alessia looks up at me.
It's a big house, I grin.
She laughs.
It is.
She glances at the window. It's pitch black outside. Is it 7 o'clock? 10 o'clock? I've lost all track of time. Alessia's curled up in one of the armchairs facing the fire, wrapped in a green throw, enjoying a roast beef and salad sandwich and drinking red wine. Her hair is a wonderful mess, spilling over her shoulders down to her waist. She's luminous and lovely, and mine. I toss another log on the fire, sit down in the armchair opposite her, and take a sip of the delicious wine. I've not felt this degree of peace since Kit died. In fact, I can't remember ever feeling this way.
Maxim puts down his glass and picks up a sandwich. He looks glorious. Rumpled hair, stubble, wicked green eyes that glow with desire and love in the firelight. He's wearing his bulky cream sweater and his black jeans with a rip at the knee, and she spies his skin beneath. Alessia drinks him in.
Happy? He asks. Yes, very muchly.
He grins.
I feel the same. I don't think I've ever been happier. I know you'd like to stay here, and so would I, but I think we should go back to London tomorrow, if that's all right. I have stuff I need to do. Okay. Alessia nibbles at her lip. What? I like being in Cornwall. It is not as busy as London. There are less people, less noise. I know, but I should get back to London and check on my flat.
Alessia examines her glass of wine.
Back to reality, she whispers. Hey, it's going to be okay.
She stares into the fire, watching one of the logs spit embers onto the hearth.
Darling, what's wrong?
Maxim is concerned.
I want to work.
Work? Doing what?
I don't know. Cleaning?
His brow creases.
Alessia, I don't think so. You don't need to clean anymore. You're a talented woman. Is that really what you want to do? We need to find something more interesting for you. And we need to make sure that it's legal for you to work here. I'll look into it. I have people who can help.
His smile is sincere and encouraging.
But I want to earn my own money. I understand. If you're caught, though, you'll be deported. I don't want that.
Alessia's heartbeat spikes. She cannot go back.
Neither of us wants that, Maxim reassures her. Don't worry about this. We'll figure it out. Maybe you can do something with your